This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A recent federal appeals court ruling means that a number of people now behind bars on federal gun charges, in fact, never committed a crime. The court reversed an earlier interpretation of the state's unique structured sentencing laws that resulted in an untold number of people being charged with unlawful possession of a firearm. As Law and Order Week continues, we've invited Chris Brooks to join us. Chris is the legal director of the ACLU of North Carolina, and he's my guest on the program to explain how gun possession has landed innocent folks behind bars. Chris, welcome. Good to have you.
Thank you so much for having me, Frank.
So can you explain this a little more for us? There are federal gun charges, and it's unlawful to possess a gun if you've committed a serious crime. They define serious crime in the statute as serving a year or more of time on a sentence for another charge, right?
Yeah, it's an exceptionally complicated sort of intersection of federal and state law. And I think the sort of the best way to explain how it works is to focus on an individual who was impacted and who served time, who shouldn't have served time. USA Today ran a front page article about this a while back. A gentleman named Terrell McCollum was arrested, charged, convicted for being a felon in possession of a firearm. He was over at his ex-girlfriend's house cleaning out some stuff that he had left at her house. They had an argument. The police were called as a result of that argument. Police are there. He is removing stuff that is his from his girlfriend's house and carries two unloaded guns that are his grandfather's old guns out. The police stop him and say that he is a felon who is possessing a firearm illegally. And, you know, what is a felon? And you sort of touched on that question. And the way that the federal statutes define a felon is they say someone who has committed a crime serious enough to merit a year in prison. And in North Carolina, we have a unique, I think Kansas is the only state that has a similar a way of structured sentencing right. in regards to folks who have are receiving punishment. And we look at the severity of a criminal record, someone's criminal record, and deciding how long that they can be sentenced to. In Mr. McCollum's case, the most severe crime that he had committed in his past, he had a modest record, was he stole a gun. And in his case, under North Carolina structured sentencing, he could have only been punished by a maximum of 10 months in prison.
So I'm going to stop you there.
Yeah.
So under the statute, and it was a federal gun violation
right.
that he was charged with as he was walking out with those
exactly.
those rifles. And so and by statute, as we understand it now, 10 months, not enough to
right.
be a felony. So he shouldn't have been charged. But
what the Fourth Circuit said in Simmons last year, the case that sort of changed all of this, is we look at what Terrell McCollum could have been punished with, which was a maximum of 10 months in prison. Therefore, he's not a felon. Therefore, it was not illegal for him to possess a gun when he walked out of his girlfriend's apartment on that day. What the Fourth Circuit had said before Simmons was they had said what we look at is the worst case offender. So someone else committing the same crime could have received more than a year. Based on the fact that they had a worse record than Mr. McCollum. So essentially what the Fourth Circuit was doing pre-Simmons was rounding up. They weren't looking at the individual who was in front of them. They were looking at the absolute maximum under the worst case scenario and determining who was a felon. So you have people, and we don't know, and we'll get into that, I'm sure, who are in prison for felony possession of a gun when they weren't felons in possession of a gun. There other and that can has a maximum punishment of 10 years in prison. So there are folks who are serving 10-year terms for crimes that they did not commit. The other way it works out is there something called sentencing enhancements, where if you have committed three violent felonies in your past and you commit another crime, you have a mandatory minimum sentence of 15 years. Well, the way that we calculated whether you had committed a felony has now been thrown out the window. So a lot of folks who would have been sentenced to 4-5-year terms or serving 15-year terms, more than 15-year terms,
because this new felony had been added to their list. And of course, as you say, it probably it should not have been under the
one of the felonies they had in the past was not a felony anymore.
It was not a felony anymore because they were because the court had rounded up in their case. They had really received the minimum sentence, but somebody said, aha, but you could have gotten more. And therefore, we're going to consider. So there might be two charges. Well, no. So the question is, how many people are in this condition?
And that's a wonderful question. And the answer, Frank, is that we don't know. We wrote last week to the Department of Justice and sought their sort of proactive assistance in compiling that information because they haven't done anything in the more than a year since Simmons to compile and share and publicize a list of folks who are impacted by Simmons. So we can guess about how many folks are impacted. About half of the North Carolina felony convictions in North Carolina state courts over the past decade were for offenses that no longer count as felonies. In the USA Today investigation, which was a very narrow investigation, they found 60 folks who were in prison for crimes that they should not have been convicted of. Since the Simmons decision, the Fourth Circuit has cited to Simmons 124 times. You don't get up to the Fourth Circuit, you know, you don't file something on Tuesday and get up there on Friday. It takes a while. So if there are that many cases where they're having to apply Simmons and vacate people's sentences or their convictions, and you got 124 already, that tells you it's a lot more. Our preliminary investigation at the ACLU of North Carolina, talking with the criminal defense bar throughout the state, revealed there could be more than 3,000 people who are impacted by the Simmons case.
One way or another. Maybe they shouldn't be there at all, or maybe their sentences should be reduced. So how old is the federal statute? That gives you some perspective on this. In other words, how long could this have been going on?
It's decades old. Yeah. The structured sentencing guidelines in North Carolina went into place in 1993.
Wow.
So that's the first time you could start having implications. So you're talking about 19 years worth of cases that need to be reviewed to get a comprehensive idea of the scope of this problem.
All right. So you're already in the process. The first thing you do is figure out who's affected, and you're in the process of trying to get that list, right?
And that's one of the sticking points is the government is the folks are the folks with the access to the most information. They have all of the information about prior crimes that people convicted. A lot of the public defenders throughout the state have been going based on the data they have. They don't have complete data. The government has complete data. And up until this point, in the past year, they've not taken any steps to publicize or put together such a comprehensive list so that we can reach out to folks who might have might be serving for things that they were not guilty of or serving sentences that are just grossly disproportionate with the crimes they actually were guilty of.
So you do have to actually take them to court to get them to generate the list, which is another whole judicial process?
I think we're still looking at that. Yeah. I mean, we wrote to them on August 7th asking for that sort of feedback and that sort of information. They did take some steps after our letter on August 9th. They indicated they were no longer going to stand in the way and put up some procedural roadblocks. They'd been for folks who had already gotten to court with their attorney and were saying, you know, I should be let out or my sentence should be reduced. They'd been, you know, saying that some of these were barred by the statute of limitations that applies. They said they're no longer going to do that. For folks, the two vehicles that you can use to get relief in these cases are called a motion to vacate and a habeas petition. For folks who are not eligible for a motion to vacate, they said they won't stand in the way of a habeas petition. But Frank, those are sort of responsive, passive actions. The government saying we will no longer be an obstacle. That is very different than taking proactive steps to make sure justice is realized.
So not only generate the list, but then do something about it. Find these people and take whatever steps it is to expedite the legal process to get them out or to make sure that real justice is served.
Yeah, share that information with the public defender's offices. Mm-hmm. Share that information with those who are incarcerated or are now out on probation, because that's something that oftentimes happens in these cases. Share that with the inmates and prior inmates so that they can either get out, have their sentences reduced, or have their records cleaned up. They, you know, have not provided, you know, they've said in some instances they're not going to stand in the way of sentences being reduced, but in other instances they've not made clear that that's what they're going to do. So they're not even providing sort of comprehensive passive positive responses. They need to say in all of these cases where your sentences are too long, we're no longer going to stand in the way. In fact, we're going to help make sure that the appropriate thing happens here.
Well, is there any other responsibility for people who have already served a sentence? Can they come back and ask for any kind of compensation?
Well, and I think that that is something that, you know, has been kicked around by some attorneys in the state. I know that right now the public defender's offices, as you can well imagine, are already overworked before Simmons. And so after Simmons, they're just scrambling to get folks out of prison who shouldn't be in prison and get sentences reduced. But I know that their plan is at some point to loop back around to folks who are out already. For example, Mr. McCollum, who was profiled by USA Today, is out of prison already. But he shouldn't have that charge on his record, making it, and I know you're going to be talking about this later in your show, all that more difficult for him to reenter society, be able to get a job, all those things that we want to have happen.
So is this all the U.S. Justice Department, or does the state have any role in this?
This is the U.S. Justice Department. These are federal gun crimes and federal sentencing enhancements that are involved. So the U.S. Attorney's offices in the western, middle, and eastern portions of the state are the ones who are sort of where the rubber meets the road in regards to these cases. But they fall under the oversight of DOJ, and that's why we wrote to DOJ. And, you know, we're heartened and encouraged that DOJ took this first step to move things in the right direction. But this is absolutely not sufficient.
And does it require any change in the sentencing guidelines for the state of North Carolina, or just this new interpretation now will keep this injustice from happening?
The new interpretation, in our opinion, is the accurate interpretation of the law and how it should have always been interpreted. But it also says we're going to judge the person who's in front of us. So as long as the government, you know, doesn't stand in the way and proactively take steps to make sure that, you know, what Simmons says is carried out, that should move us a lot of the way in the right direction.
Chris, thanks so much for being on the program.
Thanks, Frank.
Chris Brook, legal director for the ACLU of North Carolina, aclu of North Carolina.org. To find out more, our program continues as Law and Order Week continues. We'll look at the collateral consequences of a criminal record in a moment. Stay tuned.